Hey, everybody, buckle up. Strap in, get ready, because this is a big one. Welcome to King of the Ride podcast. I am your host, Ted King. Our guest today is Derek Teal. Derek is the founder and owner of Dialed Health, which is an awesome operation offering strength training for cyclists. He has a fantastic suite of training programs. It's all very easily executed online in this modern age. Check them out at dialedhealth.com. There's more to this story than that. Derek has a massive community, some 200,000 followers on Instagram. So maybe you've seen his videos, maybe you're a client of his, maybe you're already following him. Or maybe you caught wind of what's recently happening in his life. Derek is a ripping fast cyclist himself, and with a wealth of knowledge, he's someone that I've wanted to have on the podcast for a while in the first place. But recently, at the end of January of this year, he experienced something that no one should ever have to go through. And it's not hyperbole to say that we are happy he survived. Derek was out for an easy spin on quiet roads close to his house, roads he knows well, and he was hit by a car at what is estimated at 65 miles per hour. A hit and run, a situation in which there's quite frankly no way the driver didn't know that he hit Derek and frankly left him for dead, and then he simply drove off. I won't go into more details here because Derek paints a, let's say, vivid picture of how it all went down. From there, we'll talk about how he's been healing, how he's been coping, how his family has been dealing with it, his business, his friends, his supporters, and how faith has been this instrumental crutch through it all. We all have challenges in our lives. They're all shapes and sizes, no matter who you are. Derek draws out some deep emotion from me through this conversation, so please have some patience as I struggle through the telling of a story of connection to Derek. But truth be told, Derek's level of positivity and optimism is gravitational, and his story of moving forward is something that's meaningful for anyone, no matter your struggle. Shifting gears just a little bit, we talk about my 2024 comeback today. It kicked off with a recent training camp in Mallorca, which was nothing shy of a dream trip. And then straight to Valley of Tears Gravel in Texas. I have Mid-South this coming weekend, and I just released a video in partnership with Cannondale to help tell this 2024 story of my comeback. So check those videos out. I promise I'm not trying to make this about me. Derek mentions these in this conversation, so I'll drop those links into the show notes. And truth be told, a very meaningful part of every single day in this comeback for me is starting my day with AG1. It puts me on the right track nutritionally from the moment I step out of bed. I always keep the travel packs on hand, so whether it's to Europe, to Texas, to Oklahoma, wherever I'm going, or the big bag back at home, it is as easy as one scoop into a shaker. I do about 5 ounces of water, and by taking that step every day, I've set things into motion to be in control of my nutrition and my activity right from the get-go. AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and much, much more, all derived from real foods. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2, plus 5 free travel packs with your first purchase exclusively by visiting drinkag1.com/TedKing. Again, drinkag1.com/TedKing. Check it out. That's it for me. Folks, please welcome Derek Teal to the podcast. Derek, I want to kick off the conversation with a game that I once did with Ian Boswell. Rose, bud, thorn for today. So what's good today? What's something that you're looking forward to that's the bud? And what is your thorn today?
I'll be honest, and I'm not just trying to butter you up right now, but this really is the rose of my day. Because the thorn has been the abscessed wound that popped up yesterday and put me in the ER all day.
Oh, man.
Out of nowhere. It was just a really scary scenario. And then my sciatica flared up. And I don't want to be just talking about all the negative stuff, but in the last 48 hours, there's been a lot of bad things happening with my recovery. Uh-huh. And it's just bumps in the road, but it's been a tough couple of days.
Yeah. Yeah. Understandable. Bud, what are you looking forward to today? outside of this podcast, because I'm assuming that today that this conversation was the rose, unless it's both rose and bud.
Probably both rose and bud, but my family's about to come home, and the best thing about recovering right now is the time I've gotten to spend with my kids.
Yeah.
And so just being at home with my family, I have 2 3-year-olds and a 5-year-old, and they're all boys. My wife's an angel, and you know, we're best friends. So it's just made home life really nice. Mm-hmm. And just being able to look around and watch them and hang out has been awesome. So yeah. I'm looking forward to them coming home after this.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. Well, yeah, thank you very much for taking the time. I'm really interested in your greater history and recent history. And I think we're going to talk about a lot today. So there's the common vernacular way of catching up with someone. You know, you're going to say, hey, how's it going? Hey, Derek, how are you? Blah, 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 blah. I imagine in the past few weeks, that kind of conversation, that kind of conversation starter has taken a different tone. So with the full meaning of the question, how are you today? Physically, mentally, like you said, the past 48 hours have been challenging. How are you today?
I'm okay. I feel like I'm getting really low on my own strength at the moment.
Yep.
And I'm very open about my faith. I can't imagine doing this without God and pulling in someone else's power to just get me through what I've gone through, which has been the hardest thing I've ever dealt with in my life. And so even though I'm just feeling okay today, I know that it could be so much worse. And to be honest, the recovery has been so hopeful. Up until the last couple of days, there's really just been progress every single day.
Yeah.
And I've been able to do far more than anyone has expected to, including my doctors and my nurses. And so it's been easy to say good because there's been so much hope and excitement. And if someone texts me and asks me how I'm doing, I really just say, all things considered, I'm doing awesome. You know, yeah. Progress every day. So that's really been my true answer until the last 48 hours.
Yeah.
So I did think it was interesting, the timing that we are doing this podcast and connecting, but I'm also so grateful for it because, you know, I have my own podcast and my plan to get back to work was to record a podcast about this car hitting me. Mm-hmm. And I was realizing that sitting in a garage by myself and doing this by myself was probably a really bad idea. And it was funny because I tried multiple times to do it, but as I approached it or would start shuffling things around to get my laptop set up and recording and all that, it's like, it felt like opposite magnets. Huh. Or yeah. I guess it'd be same magnets, like pushing each other away. I felt this force just being like, no, like don't go and do this. Mm-hmm. And so the same day I had given myself a deadline to record a podcast and really just tell all of my members, all of my followers, everyone in the Doubt Health community, bring them up to speed on what I've been doing. I realized I just couldn't do it. And you actually DM'd me within hours of making that decision.
Wow.
And so, yeah, very grateful to have a chance to talk about it with you and hopefully be uplifting for people. Mm-hmm. and save a few people from cars, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, shoot. Yeah. That's excellent timing. I appreciate that initial response and I'm really glad we're doing this. And so my guess is that my audience probably knows the one sentence summary of what happened to you in this accident. Mm. I probably know a 5-sentence summary. Your audience knows a deeper summary. For the sake of clarity, for me, my audience, your audience, can you walk me through the story of what happened on January 30th, 2024?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was actually coming back from a training camp I'd done with my athlete, Lance Hayden. He's the man.
Great dude. And great dude.
We had an absolute blast training together down in his neck of the woods. I pushed it way too hard. I came home early with no sleep and I got sick. So this was the first ride I was going back out after being sick. And it was just a zone 2 flatland ride on some country roads. And to be honest, riding a lot of roads that people in my local area go to get away from cars. And so I was about an hour in on a 2-hour ride when I reached for my phone and I wanted to get a little bit of content. I realized I didn't have my phone, which is crazy because I don't think I've done a ride without my phone even before my kids were born. It's just because it's part of content, it's part of work. This was one of the strangest pieces to the story that a lot of people don't know about.
Yeah.
And so I realized, oh gosh, I was leaving in the middle of the day. I had already done a podcast that day for my own show. I had 100 things going on, and I left my phone on my desk in my garage and just left right out without it. So I was like, you know what? I'm at my turnaround point anyways. It doesn't matter. I got my live track on, which apparently needs to sync to your phone. And so I'm like, I got to get home anyways. So I start making my way home. And that's when I approached a four-way intersection. And I wanted to add 10 minutes of just a beautiful backcountry road. And I turned on this road called Wise, which is really popular around here because it connects to a lot of like famous climbs. In fact, I know you had Nielsen on the podcast recently.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll see that he has a lot of KOMs in this zone.
You're in there, right? And, on. Yep.
Yeah. And so I was going to turn left on this road, Crosby Herald, and it's coming up to a four-way stop. There's a car approaching on the left. They look like they're slowing down. I'm checking up my speed. And this is where I want to be really transparent. You know, four-way stop, country roads, you know, if it's clear, like I'll roll a lot of stops, just like most cyclists. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I come to a 3-second stop every stop sign. And so that was kind of my plan, was just to check up speed, make sure it's clear, roll through like every other stop sign I've done. And so I do that and I see the car from the left. I start checking up speed. I'm like, okay, car's coming. Looks like it's slowing down. I'm going to look straight. I'm going to look to my right. And as soon as I started getting into the intersection and looking left, what I expected to see was this car slowing to a stop at the stop sign. But what actually was happening was that the car was going way faster than it was when I initially saw it. And it was only a split second from hitting me. And the only thing I could think of doing was just jumping as high as I could. It was like a cat. I pushed off my handlebars. Everyone's like, weren't you clipped in? Yeah, but I think everything just went with me. I just went, pushed up as high as I could. And then I felt the car hit me and it was just such a fast impact. It just felt like an explosion, you know?
Yeah.
I did a couple cartwheels in the air and then landed on my side, on my right side. And I guess to give you the audience reference on how fast this car was going, it was estimated at 65 miles per hour from the investigation. And thankfully it was a small car. And thankfully I jumped because my hip ended up hitting the top corner of the passenger windshield.
Okay.
And so high.
Good thing you were at that camp with Lance. I mean, he's a cyclocrosser. You're working on your bunny hops.
Exactly. I've been doing a lot. Before this, I was doing a lot of plyometrics as well in my own workouts, funny enough. But just it kind of shows as well that I barely was even, like my back wheel was barely even in the intersection. Like I hit the front right side of the car when I was making a left turn. You know, like normally if a car was slowing or if a car was going even a, I don't know, moderate pace from where I had saw it, you probably hit the middle of the hood or it would clip your back, the back part of your bike or whatever.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case at all. And so I just did a couple cartwheels in the air. I landed. The only part I don't remember of this accident was landing on the ground because I remember the cartwheel and then I just remember turning and seeing a big truck driving toward me. And my first thought was I need to crawl out of the road so this car doesn't run me over. So I rolled from my right side to my left side and started to crawl. But as I rolled over, my femur rolled in my leg. And that's when I knew my leg was broke. And it was just the most excruciating pain. And I saw my whole leg. It just looked like a noodle in the way it moved. And so I couldn't crawl. and the truck was still coming towards me. So I just laid on my back and I just waved my arms so it would hopefully see me. And thankfully it did. And when I realized it came to a stop, I just put my head back. And that's when I could feel the pain in my hip. And I went down to touch it. And I just felt a bone in my palm and just a big hole. And I kind of thought it was my femur. But what it actually was my pelvis. And basically the whole iliac crest just blew off along with all the meat with it. Oh. So my glute medius, all of that, it just blew off the side. And the bottom part of my pelvis, if you guys look at what a pelvis looks like, right below your ilium, it stuck out. And it was just this jagged bone that I put my palm into. And when I looked down, and I'm sorry to get so graphic, but there was just, all I could see was blood. And so thankfully within seconds, I saw the people get out of that truck that had stopped. Lloyd and Lisa, absolute angels. They ran toward me, started helping me. And while Lisa was getting, she basically was looking for my phone and I told her I didn't have it. And I told her to call my wife. I told her her name and her phone number. And the reason this part of the story is so significant is because part of me feels like God knows what our limit is at a given time. And I think for my wife, knowing that my brain was okay, because I had given her that number and she got a call from a different phone, she told me that was the thing that kept her going when she was going to the ICU because she didn't know what happened. So that little bit of the story is so, it's just not a coincidence. It's just, in that time as well, I had another lady run up to me and we still can't, I don't know her name. And she took her sweatshirt off and she just started stuffing it in my side. And we found out she was an off-duty registered nurse. And she was there within 90 seconds or so. I mean, I don't know if I have that officially on record time frame wise, but it was close. Mm-hmm. And then we had a witness of the driver who ended up skidding to a stop, getting out and then getting back in the car and driving away. But he saw him. And so essentially the driver hit me and just left me to die on the road. And if it was just another day where there weren't these people there with the traffic, I would have just bled to death. And so it was, he just felt like angels came and saved me. Felt like from the moment of impact, God was like, nope, you're gonna get the help you need. And I don't want to just totally blow the story here, but I'm looking at a full recovery, which is just unbelievable. And so there's been some complications in this recovery, like I mentioned earlier, but the fact that I completely snapped my femur and destroyed my pelvis, but my hip joint is totally okay, is like a miracle, you know? And so there's these little things that's just insane. But basically just going back to it, I think the ambulance showed up in about 12, 13 minutes and got into the ambulance. I immediately just asked for pain medication, but they said no, because I had to do a CAT scan.
Cool.
So it was a 25-minute drive to the hospital. And it hurt so bad. And I just couldn't stop thinking about my wife and kids. And this really kind of troubled me at the time, because part of me thought, you know, as a Christian, I'd be at peace in this scenario. All I could think about was my, you know, my kids growing up without their dad. So this has been something I'm going to be working through. But I think what I realized was I honestly, man, wasn't concerned about my death, I was just concerned about my family. And so at this point, I was just going in and out of consciousness on the drive over, and I just kept asking for time updates. And we made it to the ICU, and I just remember going straight in to the surgery room. And I thought to myself, like, wow, like, I'm already here. You know, I've had injuries in the past. Like, I've broken several bones. I've torn my ACL. I've had concussions. I've had the normal injury list for a lifelong cyclist. Let's just say that. Collarbone, you know.
Yeah.
But you wait usually for surgery a little bit. You know, I know how the doctor's thing goes. So when I went straight into surgery, it almost like amplified the reality of how serious this was. And so at that point, they put me under anesthesia, and they put me on all the drugs, fentanyl, like the worst stuff, but everything I needed. And so over the next 2 days, I had multiple operations, and a lot of it was in my femur, in my hip. Got a rod in my femur and a lot of hardware putting my pelvis back together. I also found out that I tore my colon, which again was a very scary thing because, you know, if you tear that thing all the way through, it could be like a colostomy bag for the rest of your life. So thank God that was not torn all the way through. But they had to split my stomach open to fix it. So that was a whole other, it's been a whole other rehab scenario. And then I collapsed a lung, which, you know, it felt so minor compared to everything else that had happened, but I still had to rehab that. I'm still actually doing some specific diaphragm exercises to just make sure my diaphragm comes back stronger than ever. And it's actually one of the things I can do now, even though I can't ride right now or really do any aerobic work. And so I had the surgeries, and I woke up 2 days later, and my dad told me the first thing I remember, he said, and I got like a tube down my throat. I was doing dry January, and he's like, "Hey, I don't think you really finished dry January because they put you on a lot of drugs as soon as you got in here."
There's some levity.
So I think I flipped my dad off. And then that honestly was the best icebreaker ever, because like everyone just knew like my brain was good. And I'm still so grateful for that, you know?
Yeah.
So, since then I was in the ICU for 6 days, or I guess five, almost 6 days. And then spent the rest of the time in the hospital for a total of 9 days. And I got out of there sooner than I should have, just because of my good family support and home situation, thankfully. Because I was having a really hard time in the hospital. The one thing I've ever dealt with in my life, as far as like a weird phobia, is claustrophobia. And I've just noticed just little things here and there, you know, get a little tight on an airplane. I can take a couple deep breaths. I'm like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah.
But not being able to move most of my body made me feel so claustrophobic. And then when they would shut the door in my room, I would kind of start having a meltdown. So it just had a tough time in there. And I'll be honest, man, I've never spent time like that in a hospital. My brother-in-law just had bone cancer that he beat, you know, and knowing how much time he spent in the hospital, it just blows me away. So the whole experience for me has been eye-opening into a lot of people's realities. And it makes me realize how lucky we are to be living and riding our bikes and going to gravel races and road fondos and being outdoor in fresh air, you know? And so I don't think it's something I'll ever take for granted again. And I'm just so grateful to be moving forward and doing everything I can with recovery right now, which has been pretty interesting. I'm kind of doing a nice mix of science and real hippie stuff. I'm doing everything I can right now. So
yeah,
but that's it. But yeah, even when I was in the ICU, the doctor came in, he's like, "Hey man, I know this is bad." He's like, "But you're going to make a full recovery." He's like, I can't believe it, but that's what he told me. So, you know, barring some of these complications, I think we're still moving that direction. And yeah, I'm really excited to see what the second half of this year holds. In fact, I think I signed up for my redemption ride in the ER. So I think I have a good idea for what we're going to do in August, but
nice.
Yeah, that'll be a surprise.
Man, oh man. My dad would often say, better bodies through modern medicine. And he's an orthopedic surgeon, so he is the person piecing people's lives back together. And I get choked up talking about him because he had a stroke and he's certainly not the person that he was before his stroke. With my point being, I obviously get choked up talking about it. And as soon as I start losing it, I can't complete a sentence. Mm-hmm. That has been obviously a big challenge in my life. No different than what you're going through. And purely the ability to elucidate what you just said is incredible. And not to not get caught up. Like I'll start talking about my dad and I cannot continue. I just have to stop. It's like my vocal cords stop and I just have the inability. It's been incredible because he's doubled down on faith also. Mm. And I know he wouldn't be, I don't know. It's so foundational to him and his, I wouldn't say recovery. I mean, he's in a nursing home and life is very, very challenging, but it's awesome to see that foundation for him, and it's amazing for me to follow you in your path and see how foundational it is for you. So that is amazing. Your ability to tell the story is amazing, and I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for letting me do it. I was, you know, it's funny because I don't know if people know that we've actually never met in person.
Yep.
We talked here and there online. So it's weird to almost get on a podcast like this and just go straight to the heaviest thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really grateful that it was you that reached out because you're a father and you just, I think you probably understand this and it sounds like you do, especially after what you've gone through with your dad. So I'm really grateful for the opportunity to share it. And I don't want it to be this traumatic story. I don't want it to finish on that. Sure. You know, I want people to be encouraged by it, that, you know, for example, with their recovery, what they're recovering from, there's probably something you can do to improve. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for your father, he's leaning into his faith, which is without a doubt the most important thing in the world. I have people who have been DMing me, watching me do workouts with my brace on and people handing me dumbbells and just laying on a bench saying, wow, I haven't trained in 2 months because I pulled a hamstring. And so, or I broke my wrist and I haven't done anything in this amount of time, or, mm-hmm. hey, thanks. This is my first workout I've done in a while because I feel like I have no excuses. And of course, my goal is not to guilt trip people, even though I am a trainer. So I will use it at some point to guilt trip somebody. But the exciting thing about this is that God can make a really bad thing good. And so the inspiration that people could draw from this, whether that's leading more into their faith or just digging deeper into all of that, or really deciding to not give themselves any more excuses. So whatever that thing is that's between them and the thing they want, you know, the model for my business styled health is start moving forward. And that's all I'm doing. You know, it's like I get dealt this hand and now I'm moving forward every single day. And even though physically I'm way far back from where I've been, even before this accident, that I mean, I'm still doing the same process if mm-hmm. you really think about it. And so you have to complete that next thing that you feel like you need to do, even if you don't know how it's going to get you to that point you want to be. You have to do it to just clear your mind of it. And usually the process of getting that next thing done, it reveals the next step. Mm-hmm. And there's just no other way to do it. So with this accident, it's like, wow, okay. It's almost strange how perfect this is for me to have a testimonial for my own business and to show that I'm putting into practice what I preach. And what I've been shown through this process already of 6 weeks of showing it has been that it really has inspired a lot of people to get moving. Mm-hmm. And that's just been incredible. And it's really shown what the community is capable of. I mean, after this accident, I had fundraisers. There's actually in Richmond, Virginia this weekend, Dial Fit member, Jason Anderson, shout out to him, ultra cyclist. He is doing a 24-hour mountain bike ride to raise money for me. And people are the partners I work with, brands I've never even talked to, people pouring money into these raffles and yeah. all in support of me has been one of the wildest things ever, because you know, you don't need reminders that there's bad people out there, but sometimes you do need a reminder of how many good people are really out there. And there's just really so many. Yeah. And this experience has honestly reminded me that as well. So that's been a real positive.
Oh, that's incredible. The part when you were saying you were sort of in and out of lucidness in the ambulance, and the first thing and only thing on your mind is if your kids are going to grow up without a father. Like, yeah, that hits to the core. And for whatever reason, recently I'm my wasted time Instagram scroll is like the positivity of sports instead of stupid memes. It's all this like, hey, here's a really upstanding story. And often it's little kids who are just diehard fans of particular teams. And then that team captain takes in that kid, and that kid is the, you know, the a one parent child. And you can just see what it, you know, how heartbreaking it is to know that that kid has lost a parent, to see the positivity of movement, of sports, of that's been very strangely on my timeline recently. And so, yeah, I can't even imagine. Oh, sorry. And then the punchline being there, I am like scrolling at the airport, wasting time before I get on the plane. And I'm just having tears come pouring down my eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Because you empathize with like the kid and the parent wants, oh my goodness. So there you are in the ambulance. And I can't even fathom what that is like going through your mind.
Well, that's the funny thing about fatherhood is you start to notice those types of things and they impact you so much differently than they used to.
Sure.
But same with the injury and the time in the hospital. Mm-hmm. That's been another thing. And to be honest, since this, a lot of people have reached out with their story as well. But I've had this weird feeling where I almost need to stop thinking about all the horrific things happening in the world because it gets a little bit heavy, you know? And you know, it's just like what's it called? Your reticular activating system. A lot of self-development mentors talk about this.
Okay.
And it's like your brain has this filter and you basically start noticing something more frequently when you notice it.
Oh, right. You buy a Volkswagen and all of a sudden you see all the Volkswagens on the road.
Perfect example. And so you can train your reticular activating system to see specific things and create different neural pathways in your brain. And the more you think about things, the more that pathway gets deeper into your brain. It's an easier route for your thoughts to take, essentially. Apparently, I'm not doing the science on this. I know someone's going to ask for a study.
Yeah, exactly.
There is a great book. It's called, maybe we could put it in the notes. Anyways, so I'm stuck on the book title because I can see the color of the book right now, but it's killing me. Anyways, I feel like right now I've been so inundated with so much pain and suffering that I think part of me does need to feel like I need to start balancing it out.
Yeah.
You know, with some other things. So I don't want to forget about anything and cover it up and pretend this stuff's not going on. But at the same time, I need to start balancing it out, I think, a little bit too. So it's good for people to also realize that it's like where your focus goes, your energy flows. Yeah. And you got to keep focus on positive things.
Yeah. Moving forward, it's the philosophy of Dialed Health. I love it. So, I mean, you hit on it with parenthood. There are moments in life that create a distinct timeline, a before and after, a BC and AD, before you become a parent, after you become a parent. And as a result of that thing that's going to create this timeline shift, your perspective becomes different and your answers to questions are going to become different. And it presents a dichotomy in your own life. I have to imagine that there's some sort of dichotomy in your life right now, before the accident and after the accident. You presumably have had a different perspective. So for example, like where does cycling fit in? If I were to ask you the question a year ago, where does cycling fit into your life today? Your answer a year ago would be different than today.
Yeah.
Let's take that question literally. With the benefit of hindsight, if I asked you a question a year ago, where does cycling fit in your life then as compared to now?
I honestly don't feel like anything has changed because I am very lucky to be in a temporary position right now.
Yep.
And I've already had a lot of conversations with my family about getting back on the bike. It's definitely something I plan to do and hopefully back to the extent that I was.
Nice.
With that said though, I don't want to get back on, let's just say, the road bike in particular and just do it like I used to do it, because there need to be some changes to be safer mm-hmm. for myself and be a little bit more defensive. So I don't want to just go get on the bike and think that I'm just going to, okay, the goal is to ride like I used to ride, because I want to do it a little bit differently. And it's kind of hard to say what that's going to look like until I do it. Mm-hmm. But I know that, you know, a year ago, cycling's been this thing where it's part of my job, but it's 100% my outlet and the thing I love the most that brings me probably just the most fun. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe, I don't know if I would say happiness, because obviously my family brings me a ton of happiness, but they bring me something deeper, like true joy, you know? Mm-hmm. And cycling, just the thing I love to do most, like the fact that it's so integrated with my job now is an absolute dream. You know, when I grew up as a downhill racer and I was on track to being a pro downhill racer. And when I pulled out of that and became a personal trainer in the general fitness industry, I had no plans of coming back into the cycling industry. So the way things have worked out is unbelievable. And it's just the start moving forward thing. I never planned for it to be this way, but I just kept like leaning into the opportunities. And so I can't say that anything feels different other than the fact I just can't ride my bike right now. Yeah. And I'm really starting to miss it, man. Yeah. Seriously. I mean, the first month I was so beat up that even the thought of riding it's like I almost didn't miss it. There's so many other emotional things going on. But now that I'm moving around a little bit more, I'm kind of gimping around. You know, the extra movement, it really makes me want to get on the bike. I actually already did a single leg spin
The
turbo.
Yeah.
Dude, 10 minutes single leg is so hard. Have you ever done 10 minutes? I realized, no, I was like,
I used to do like 1 minute intervals of those.
I realized while doing it, I was like, oh yeah, I've done single leg, but it's usually 30 seconds and then maybe a minute. So to be in that position and try and do 10 minutes, it almost didn't even feel worth it. But it was good to, you know, do it just symbolically.
Sure.
But even now, I'll just kind of get on the bike, put my feet on the pedals, feel the handlebars. And so, yeah, I'm really looking forward. And I'm also doing some Wim Hof breathing as a part of pain management and a lot of visualizations with it. And I'll have actually an instructor come and guide me through some of the breathing techniques. And he's really good about getting me to visualize my first ride back.
Wow.
And actually, you know what's crazy, speaking about fatherhood, is that the first time we did it, he was like trying to get me to think about being out on the bike. Mm-hmm. But it's gonna choke me up a little bit more again, but all I could think about was pulling up to my house and getting off my bike and walking into my family after a ride.
Wow.
It wasn't even the ride. All I could think about and imagine was just finishing the ride and being home.
Yeah.
You know? And so it was pretty cool. The last time I did it was the first time. You're going to laugh about this because I've been totally drooling over your trip to Mallorca.
Yeah. That was a great trip.
I visualized one of those climbs. I don't even know what it was, but you did a story pan and it was just this like exposed cliffside view over the sea.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And I pictured myself actually out on that climb. So it was cool because I even realized mentally that I am starting to get back to the point where I'm just thinking about riding, you know? And I think, I've let a lot of this trauma come out, you know, like when it comes up, I have not fought it. I've cried more in the last 20 days than the last 20 years of my life, without a doubt. And so I think it's been good. I've noticed myself like moving on from a lot of these things mentally. In fact, I give you another example of this trauma. So I've been going back to my chiropractor and he's been doing some soft tissue work. And the first time I went, I had him dig into my lat, kind of in my armpit, because I started hanging from my bar and doing some assisted pull-ups. And I realized that there was just something weird in my lat that kind of hurt. And so the whole session was good. I was talking to him normal, telling him about the accident. We're catching up, yada, yada. And I was totally fine emotionally. Dude, he started digging into my lat and I had to raise my arm up, because usually I'll assist them with some movement. And as soon as I raised my arm up, I started getting flashbacks of what my arm did when I hit the car. And I freaking lost it, man.
Yeah.
And he kept going till I was like done. It was crazy because I felt fine. And it wasn't until I started digging into my tissue.
Yeah.
Where there was pain from this very specific thing to where all of a sudden all this like emotion stuff came out. It was crazy. But then I went back today and he did the same thing and it was fine.
Huh.
It's like, and I even knew at the time, I was like, dude, I'm getting it out. Like my body wants this to come out.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't forcing it. Neither of us were forcing it.
Right.
And
right.
So yeah, it's the stuff's coming up and out. The thoughts of getting back on the bike are getting more normal, I would say, and yep. A little bit more exciting.
Yep.
I will tell you though, I'm going to be spending some time on the turbo and in my gym for a while. I might go maybe start getting on the mountain bike a little bit, but I just got to get my body super durable again. I want to make sure it's got some muscle back on it.
Yep.
You know, there's definitely been some atrophy, especially in that leg. I don't want to go out and even on my mountain bike, I don't want to go slide out and land on my hip, you know?
Sure.
Like, I want to get some meat back on the bones and feel a little bit more durable. Like I can take a hit. And I don't want to, you know, God has had the biggest role in all of this, but I've been using the hashtag harder to kill because when the rest of your body is so well developed, you are literally, you can just handle more abuse, whether that's a car crashing into you or, you know, a really, really long ride that should cause some injury that it doesn't because you're so trained. And so, yeah, it's exciting to think that I can come back and build a body and it's got a little bit of extra hardware in it now.
Yeah.
And I hopefully though, we'll come into this new training with some more wisdom and some more patience. It'll be exciting to see kind of where I can end up in 6 months. We'll, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll be out at a race together and that'd you'll be able to,
I love it.
Yeah. We could hang out and see it, but
yeah,
I think it's going to be some time on the turbo,
sure.
Really get the body back, you know?
Well, there it is again, better bodies through modern medicine. I mean, you're going to be stronger on the other side. You hit on this a second ago. There's a certain level of involvement with the sport that transcends a hobby for so many of us, right? It is, sure, it is our job, but it's our outlet. It's an emotional outlet. It's our friend group. It's our social group. It's our emotional needs. So how, there you are in the ambulance and you're not thinking, oh gosh, the bike might be taken away from me. You're thinking of your family.
Mm-hmm.
How have you grappled with that question since then? Like, what if the bike is taken away from me? Because it, you know, on its face, it's so superficial. It's like, I've thought about that. I'd be fine. I could live without cycling. I could go move on to something else. But you're right. Like, it is more than a little thing. So how have you grappled with even thinking about cycling being taken away from you?
It's crazy, man. I haven't thought about that.
Huh.
I think it's because from the impact to that point of going under medication for surgery,
yeah,
I only thought about my wife. You know, none of that matters.
Yeah.
None of that even crossed my mind, not for a split second.
Yep.
And then even when I first woke up, saw my wife, I realized I'm here with my family. Did not think about it.
Yeah.
And I think I was really fortunate for the surgeon to come in, you know, very soon after I woke up to tell me I'm going to be all right. And so I've been very lucky to not have to think that way. And I think that, you know, most likely that's not something I'm going to have to deal with this time. And I'm going to continue to pray that that's the case, but I haven't thought about it, honestly. But at the end of the day, I know that when it really comes down to it, you know, I just want to be here with my family. So
yeah,
it's just, yeah, I'll tell you though, man, it'd be sad. I mean, I love to ride my bike.
Right.
But at this, it's such a part of, you know, like I love my job like so much. I think that's one thing I've realized through this rehab is that I want to come out of this a wiser person, a more patient father, someone who doesn't stress about the little things as much. You know, I read this book called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry.
Great book.
These principles, nice. I love that you've read that.
I'm not hurrying through it. I'm most of the way through.
Oh, you're current. Okay, that's crazy. You're currently reading that?
Yep. It's on my, it's a great book. Go on.
Well, when I first even read that, it almost seemed too far for me where I'm like, okay, dude, come on. You got to get to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Because but even before having kids got so type A, like hustle culture, Gary V style mentality.
Totally.
That I was creating a lot of unnecessary stress. And it's actually been, I can credit it for a lot of success that I've had without a doubt,
mm-hmm.
But I've had to reel that in a lot. And so there are these principles that I do want to stick with me. But yeah, the reality is like with the bike and everything, it's just the thing I love to do the most with my time, period. You know, I'm obsessed with the sport. In fact, thank God there's been racing going on during mm-hmm. this downtime.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've watched more race footage of Harry Nice and Torino and the first couple classics of the year and all the day of Strade Bianche and then BWR Arizona.
Uh-huh.
I got my athlete Lance taking pulls of Keegan all day. That was awesome. That was awesome. And so
I hate when Monday rolls around because like, Yeah, you get the high of a weekend racing or a long stage race that's going to end on Sunday, and then Monday rolls around, you're like, oh man, I got to wait another week.
Yeah, 100%. But it's crazy actually how much racing is going on out there.
Yeah.
But I even just like the industry, I've gotten to meet so many more people. You know, one thing I'm going to do since I can't race some of the events I really want to be at is that I'm going to go volunteer, which is
nice.
Totally random, but okay. Levi's Grand Fondo, for example, I'm friends with Levi Leipheimer. He lives not too far from me. I was sitting there. I was like, you know what? I called my dad. I was like, we both wanted to go and I'm bummed I can't race it. Cause it's actually a race this year. It's like 140 miles, super gnarly. I did the course last year. It's amazing.
It's nuts. Yeah. I'll be there. I'll see you there. That's where we're going to hang out.
Dude,
next.
It's on. Yeah. Okay. Less than a month. Well, it's just about a month.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I'm looking through the volunteer stuff and I'm like, all right, like, let's just say I can't even walk yet, which I should be walking by then. What could I do? I was like, there's a finish line greeter position. So
nice.
I called my dad. I'm like, yo, we're going to go and be finish line greeters from 10 to 1. And I was like, if you guys finish, you think you'll finish before 1? You start at 7?
Be a 6-hour day.
Right?
I don't know. I haven't dove into the details. I mean, I think it's the Panzer course. It's crazy long. But yeah, I mean, it'll be raced like a road race. So call it 20 plus mile an hour average. I know the course is nuts. I mean, yeah, I don't want to brag, but I won it once back in my previous
life. That's what I'm talking about. Oh, sick. You've ridden it. So yeah. And it's funny because there's all that climbing and then a long downhill and a long flat section at the end. But you have like 30 miles of descent and flat.
Yep.
So anyways, I was like, we're going to finish the race. I can sit there and encourage people. That's like my gift. It's why I'm a trainer. I'm a natural encourager. Yes. So I started, I'm like, dude, we're signing up for this. I'm like, I can go to Sea Otter and do this, this, and that. And it's awesome. So yeah, it's just like, that's how much I love the sport. And this all comes back to, you know, thinking about life without the bike. Uh-huh. I'm grateful I haven't had to think about it and I don't want to. And I'm really excited to be at those events and soaking up every part of the industry. Cause you know, I almost feel like you learn how much you love being at events mm-hmm. when you want to go, even if you can't race, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm excited for it and I'm stoked you're going to be there. That's awesome. We're going
to
hang out.
I love it. Yep. Yeah. I got the whole family. We'll be out there for that. Then down to Sea Otter. It's a busy, busy month of April. So looking forward to that. Definitely looking forward to hanging out.
And dude, I'm excited to see your race season. It's sick to see you packing on the miles and doing all this stuff. So
it's wild. That's really I appreciate sick. It. Yeah. It's, I don't know, chapter 2, 3, 4. It's some chapter along the way. I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, your line of work is it's, I mean, fill in the details and tell me where I'm incorrect. It's cycling coaching. It's strength training for athletes. It's, I think, a specialty for alleviating pain in cyclists. Correct me where I missed anything there. And B, how has your background been an overall strength or has lent to your recovery so far?
So to describe my business, it's strength training for cyclists. Okay. So I don't actually write cycling programs. So all the workouts you go out and do on the bike, you would get those from another coach mm-hmm. or an awesome program like Trainer Road or something like that. Mm-hmm. I do all the off the bike work and this is what I really specialize in. And even though I can speak the language of on the bike workouts and you know, we could talk about it, I really don't have the background in that to justify working with every athlete that I'd want to work with sure. From high level to people who are just stepping on. But I spent 10 years in the general health and fitness industry, training everybody from MotoGP athletes to people who were over 400 pounds to, you know, middle-aged women who just want to do their first push-up.
Sure.
Which by the way, I learned, you know, you take a middle-aged woman and you get her to do her first proper push-up in her life.
Yeah.
Or you take a 400 pound person who truly doesn't believe that they can do a strength workout and you get them to accomplish those things. It is as gratifying as working with any pro. It is so cool.
That's awesome.
And
that's
awesome. I loved it. And in that process, I was still racing enduro and I saw this huge need for racers because I was at a high level in enduro. So I'm talking to some of our best enduro racers in the country and realized that they don't really have clear direction on their off the bike training. And everybody's got aches and pains from injury. I have had ACL injury, torn rotator cuff, all this stuff. And so I've had to rehab stuff as well. And so as I became a trainer, I started specializing in corrective exercise.
Okay.
And then other things started clicking, kettlebells and some lighter weight work that tends to be more muscular endurance leaning. And what's funny is that those have been great for content because if you're trying to make an Instagram reel, for example, that's going to go viral, you have to get very specific on what you're going to do. And you have to know who your audience is. At the end of the day, most cyclists are very repelled by gym culture, gym life. And so I've had to sort of fine tune this and understand that what's crazy is that all of my audience are cyclists. I have people that like general health and fitness and they don't ride. It's a very, very small segment of my actual audience. So that's the coolest thing about what I do now. It's just working with bike riders, but it's just they're off the bike training. So all their mobility, all of their strength training, but not the actual on the bike. Yeah. And sure, if you want a recommendation for how many zone 2 rides you should do versus intervals or whatever, like I can, like you can tell when somebody just needs a little bit of guidance just to like do their 3 rides a week, you know?
Right.
But once it starts getting, like when I'm talking to Lance about his training program, like he has his own coach and, you know, I watch their conversations and stuff like but I don't butt in. We just make sure we're on the same page.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. So then given you're right. I mean, I think most cyclists are repelled by strength training. I'm proud, and probably it's because I'm on the other side of 40 to have started a strength routine in this, you know, comeback to high level racing. But then I'm especially happy to do it because it's like good overall life health.
Nice work, dude. That's awesome.
What, given that you've leaned into it so hard, yeah, how has that lent to your recovery?
Oh yeah, the second half of your question. Yeah. Okay, get this about like God timing. This is so weird. So I had my own in-person training studio when I started. I started Dialed Health, and I was actually subleasing from a gym that there was like 5 or 6 trainers in, and ended up getting my own space. And it was this huge risk, quadrupling my overhead, sure, losing half my clientele. It was just crazy. Wife is pregnant, you know, the whole story. But at that time, I'm like Gary Vee in my head. You know what I mean? Like no risk, no reward.
Yeah.
Like putting all my chips down mentality. And so anyways, I was able to grow that business to the point where it was totally booked in person. And I was like, man, I can't do more hours. I could charge more, but it would cap out pretty quick just based on my demographic where I live. You know, I'm not in New York City, or I'm not in Malibu and just like start training celebrities. So I was like, okay, how do I continue to grow? And this was the same time I was enduro racing, and I was like, I'm going to put out some online programs. And so it's actually funny when people realize that I've done this like the backwards way. I started with a full-time training business in person with no social media.
Yeah.
And I actually created my social media after that. Huh. And because it was so successful, I was able to then launch more programs, have a subscription on my website. You get more programs for less money. Now it's an app. Now you get some coaching. Now there's more guidance. Now there's this and that. And I got to the point where I wasn't training anybody in person, and I still have this overhead of a studio.
Yeah.
And so this is a very long way of telling you that I closed my studio, and what I'm sitting in now that you see the gym equipment is actually my garage that we renovated, brought the equipment in. And for training and rehab, it has been the best thing ever. So I've had this only for over a year. Uh-huh. And this is the funny God timing, is because it has elevated my recovery. I can't even really express how much, because the second I could lay on a bench and do some 20-pound dumbbell presses, I did it.
Yeah.
And so just the blood flow, the mentality of moving around, I can just stand out here and be like, okay, how am I going to do a pull-up? Oh, how am I going to do a hamstring curl? How am I going to get my anterior tibialis activated? How am I going to work on stability? Oh, can I do my upper body? Can I get blood flow going here? Can I hang on this bar yet? And so I've just been playing around, and it's been incredible. So I also realized, I was like, oh my gosh, if I still had my studio across town, I wouldn't be able to access it like this, because I couldn't even drive for over a month.
Yep.
And so it's been the coolest thing ever, dude. I don't think I could ever not have an in-home gym after this experience. So yeah. And then my own knowledge of stuff. So for instance, I brought up the fact that my sciatica flared up. And it's really frustrating, but also this is kind of in my wheelhouse. So I was able to jump on it quick. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get through this. It's not a big deal. And I've had so many other little aches or pains or things that I know most people wouldn't be sure about that I can feel confident in that have helped my recovery because of my knowledge of corrective exercise and just in training in general. Mm-hmm. And even just like, for instance, knowing how heavy of dumbbells I can grab when I had an X-lap surgery and my abs got ripped apart. Because even then people just say, they're like, oh, you're going to get a hernia. What are you doing? You're training to look like you gotta take it easy.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to, you know, flex here, but I'm like 20-pound incline chest press. Like that would not even be a warm up normally. Like not even, I would not even consider that for a warm up. I'm like, that's the thing, is like people will say you shouldn't do anything, but I'm like, compare it to who I was before this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then let's find some middle ground here. So that's been, It's been everything for the recovery. I'm so grateful for it.
That's outstanding. Well, yeah, great to hear. I'm glad you were where you were in order to expedite recovery and just to have the knowledge of the things that you should be doing. And yeah, your positivity emanates, right? I mean, I see it on social media. I've always seen it. I saw it before the accident. I've seen it since the accident. It is a natural talent. It's incredible.
Thank you.
It's awesome to watch. How?
I was going to say, if you met my mom,
yeah,
it would make sense. She's on another level, dude.
Apple falls close to the tree.
Yeah.
How has the accident affected your family?
It's been hard on everybody. You know, I think my wife has probably had it the hardest because she's raising three kids. And I, even when I came home, it's like now she has a fourth kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's one thing I've realized as I've recovered is that obviously this isn't all just about me. And, you know, the day my parents got the call to go to the hospital, they didn't know what happened. So they didn't know if I was going to, yeah, lose my leg or like what was going to happen. Sure. And so the trauma it's caused for everybody is something I've realized a little bit more and more, and I'm trying to be more aware of. Like even yesterday, my dad came to me in the hospital when I was getting an IV full of antibiotics, and he just sat with me, and I was just, you know, I was just crying, like, and I had to stop and just be like, "Dad, I'm so sorry for putting this all on you," you know?
Yeah.
Cause it's just so much. And so I've been more aware of it, but it's been hard on everybody, man. It really has been. It's like, not just me, it's the trauma. It's even my 5-year-old. I think my 3-year-old twins have been unaffected by it, to be honest. They still ask me, "Why you go to the doctor?" Yeah. You know, "Why do you have big owie?"
Yeah.
But my 5-year-old, the first time I left, it was actually to go to the chiropractor. The first thing I went and did out by myself and left for, he stopped me at the door and he said, "Make sure you come back, Dad." And it made me realize that the last time I had left by myself, I didn't come back for a while.
Yeah.
And he did it again to me this week. Every time I leave by myself, he does it now. So I know it's affected him.
Yeah.
And it's just going to take some time to get through that, you know? So that's what's, that stuff, man, that's just, oh, it's just, it's crazy how much it hits you. But I know that, thankfully the support and like the whole community, for instance, my wife didn't have to cook a dinner for a month. We had, yeah, we had meal trains. We had people sending us DoorDash money.
Yep.
If there was a night without that, we had so many leftovers, it didn't matter.
Yep.
I kid you not, over a full month, not one dinner. And little things, getting massages booked for her,
yeah,
facials, time with her friends. So she's really been coming around. But that's one thing I'm really grateful for is the fact that she's gotten so much love, because that's just the thing you don't realize. It's like you need everything right now, but so do they.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know who's really paying attention or who has gone through a trauma when they ask how the caregiver is, and not just the recipient or the person who's injured, the patient, but yeah, that is very thoughtful. How about you're strong physically, you know the direction you need to go. You have a tremendous foundation in faith. Are you doing anything for mental training? Do you speak with a psychologist? Do you feel like you have a good grasp of the mental weight that the past month has presented, month and a half?
I have been letting the emotions come up and come out at this point. You can even tell in the podcast, it's like, it comes up, I just let it roll.
Yeah.
I don't fight it. I'm kind of proud of myself for doing that. I definitely haven't been one to in the past. I know that around my kids, I don't want to be too deep into it.
Uh-huh.
But I will be seeing a therapist who specializes in trauma very soon. I'm actually going back and forth with her right now on booking.
Yep.
And she has some specific techniques to help through that. My mom's actually used it and swears by it. So I will be getting additional help there just to make sure.
Yeah.
That I'm good to go. And yeah, between that and just the prayer and the support. I mean, dude, tomorrow I'm going to my grandma's Bible study group and they're going to pray over me.
Yeah.
My grandma's Bible study. I mean, they're all in their 70s, but these women are just prayer warriors.
Uh-huh.
And so she asked me to go because they've been praying for me. And I called her last night and I just had a lot of fear about the infection and everything.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, dude, I'm there. So tomorrow morning, I'm going to be hanging out with my grandma in her Bible study group. You know, it's funny, but those things are so huge for getting back to it that I just can't imagine, for one, doing it without God and the community through faith and church and prayer and all of the energy coming from that direction. But also the outside help, like I think seeing the therapist is going to be a really good thing.
Yeah.
Because again, I guess to really answer your question, I don't feel like I have a grasp on it because I don't know when it's going to come up. Right. I saw an ambulance driving the other day and I got so paranoid,
mm-hmm.
you know? So yeah, I wouldn't say I have a grasp on it, but it would be exciting to hopefully feel that way in the future.
Yeah. I don't want to keep going back to my dad. I mean, because he was a doctor and always on the receiving end of an ambulance. I remember the same thing. I remember the first time I saw an ambulance after he had had a stroke and thinking, man, instead of being at the hospital waiting for the patient, he was in the ambulance and it rocked me.
Mm.
So yeah, to your point, like you don't know what little things are going to be a little trigger. How about your grandmother, prayer warrior? Have you grown up in a family of faith, or where has faith been in your life for your entire life?
Not really till my teenage years.
Okay,
to be honest. Yeah, it was around. I think we were the family that would say a prayer over Thanksgiving dinner with the entire family. But we didn't even do really Christmas services or something like that. And what are they called? The Creasters, Christmas and Easter only.
I've never heard
Creaster.
Of that.
Yeah. There's another one that's probably a little bit better. But yeah, we weren't even Creasters.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't until there was some rockiness in my family where my parents really turned their faith over. And what's crazy is that at the same time, that's when I met my wife. So it was when I was 16. We've been together forever.
Wow.
And she was 15. And I started going to church with her and her family. And she grew up in the church.
Okay.
And so it was interesting because, you know, I never knew Bible stories and didn't do Sunday school and this and that.
Yeah.
So it was like my parents were on their own journey and I was on my own journey as well. And yeah, it was really, really interesting. And my brother was kind of doing his own thing too at that time. He was like studying for anthropology and almost going the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it didn't come along till like a little bit later in life. And then really, I can just honestly say, I don't feel like I became truly reliant on my faith until I got married and started having kids and doing, you know, like realizing really how important it is. I'll tell you, for new parents, if you want some good daycare, drop them off with the church ladies. You know they're going to be taken care of. I'll tell you, when we had twins,
yeah.
My older son was 1.5.
Uh-huh.
So we had 3 kids in diapers. So we're talking triple poopies.
That's
you know?
Nuts, man.
and you know, they were bottle fed, so up every 2.5 hours, really, for 3 months. It was so gnarly. So that, I'm telling you, that afternoon coffee I would take into church, Saturday night service, drop the kids off, put the feet up. I'm telling you, that took my faith to another level because it was like such a good break. And I felt like I could just sit there and just take it all. It was great. So yeah, that's kind of been the experience. You know, it really didn't come around until a little bit later in my life, to be honest. Yeah.
That's great. I like it. I like it a lot. Well, for the sake of everyone's evening, your afternoon, my evening here, we'll begin to wrap up. I think, you know, I finished with three, call it traditional questions, which I think are even more impactful or interesting here. They're pretty superficial, but then they're just fun little questions to wrap up. Anyway, okay. Number one, what is your favorite place to ride a bike? Number two, what is the number one place that you would like to ride a bike that you've never ridden? And number three, with whom would you like to share a bike ride? So favorite place to ride a bike?
Malibu.
Yeah. Yeah,
right outside of Los Angeles. It's the best.
Great answer.
Those roads are insane.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
They're steep, they're long, they're largely untrafficked.
Yeah. Yeah, surprisingly. Yeah. I mean, the road riding out there is just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It's, oh my gosh, once you get into those hills, to be honest, I think that might be one of the first real things I do. Like when I can go put in some miles after all this is said and done,
yeah.
I've already been talking to my wife about it. I'm like, we're going down there.
Yeah.
And I don't have to go do crazy rides every day, but I need a few days of just good quality Malibu rides.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I'd love to get back down there.
Good answer. Where would you like to ride that you've never ridden your bike?
Probably Majorca. And I'm not trying to give you a guilt trip, yeah, but I'm telling you, that was already on my list.
Uh-huh.
I have a buddy who does bike tours there every summer. Nice. Shout out to Tony.
Yeah.
And yeah, that place looks pretty unbeatable. It's what it sounds like. I mean, what do you think?
It was phenomenal. It was funny. The last time I was there was a team camp in 2015. And I don't know. I feel like, I mean, almost in the same way that Girona has just blown up since my time racing in Europe, Mallorca, same thing. It's just, it's crazy. And only for the positive, in my impression. I think if you're a local, you might be driven crazy by, you can't leave your house and not see 100 cyclists. But phenomenal roads, amazing scenery and landscape. And I mean, the Spanish way of life and pace of life is just so idyllic. Yeah, good answer. Put that high up on your to-do list.
That's rad. Love
that. Okay, wrapping up, with whom would you like to share a bike ride?
Probably my grandpa. I have a tattoo for him on my arm. He passed away a few years back.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of health complications, just really beat up his body. But man, I'd love to go for a bike ride with him. That'd be rad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That'd be rad. I mean, there's a laundry list of pros. But I think, well, it's funny because I've also ridden with enough pros to know that it doesn't matter how pro somebody is, you know, you may not love them, you know?
Yep. Yep.
Fortunately, I think we have a really good scene in the States, and I feel like most people we go out and ride with are really rad, like especially at bigger events and whatnot. You know, like when people say like Keegan Swenson's cool, he really is freaking cool, like really cool.
Yeah.
You know, and it's same with all these riders, but there's also a few, man, you're just like, eh, not doing it for me. You know what I mean? So I feel like when you pick somebody that you'd want to go for a ride with, you have to have like a real deep friend, or you have to think like cruiser bikes, coffee shop ride. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think of with my grandpa, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Sometimes I ask a question and people get very caught up with like, well, I don't think this person's a cyclist, so I don't think we'd mesh. And I'm like, no, it's sort of like the equivalent of we're sitting down for a dinner. Who'd you like to share a dinner with? Like, we're going to share a conversation. I think the coffee shop pace of life is perfect. You can end up at a coffee shop and have that conversation. So
I will say though, I cannot wait for the day I'm out pedaling with all three of my boys.
Nice.
That is going to be, woo.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'll take that over anybody.
For sure.
You know, that is going to be cool. I'm excited for that.
Nice. Perfect. That's the perfect wrap up. Derek, you've been very generous with your time. Thank you for sharing your story, opening up and talking about the stuff that you're going through. It means a lot to me, and I know it's going to mean a lot to this audience.
Thanks, Ted. I honestly was so grateful to do with you because I feel like for whatever reason, it's probably the fatherhood thing, but I just felt really comfortable doing it. So I'm stoked, man. And I promise next time you see me, well, I can't promise, but most likely there will be no tears.
Yeah.
It will be a lot more lighthearted. It will be a little bit more fun. So I'll plan on Levi's Grand Fondo. See you out there, bro.
Perfect. Love it. We'll see you there. Thank you.